Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Friday. I'm sorry. Sunday evening. No idea what day it is. I just got a text about something on Friday. That's why I said Friday. I'm not losing my mind. I think there's a certain trade that's going to go down on Friday. Anyway, I had this whole podcast all set up with different people. You know, we're going to talk about the draft. We're going to have Jeremy Wu, our new ESPN draft analyst, reporter, was going to be on. He was all excited. We're going to introduce him to our new audience. And Kirk Goldsberry was going to be on. We're going to talk about draft strategy. And I wasn't going to have to listen to Tim Bontemps joining us from New York City.
I was going to say happy Father's Day to you and McMahon, but not only is McMahon insulting me even before the pod starts, now you're insulting me after it starts. So we're just off and running today.
And I wasn't going to talk to Ban McMahon in Dallas, Texas.
Howdy, partners. I did not insult you. You asked how your picture looked, and I said, fine, except your face is still in it. That was just a simple fact. It's not an insult.
I should be nicer to you since I delayed this podcast by over an hour. So sorry about
that. Watch some guy you've never heard of play golf.
I was working.
Allegedly.
I was working. Anyway, we had a minor NBA trade on Sunday. The Suns have agreed in principle to send Bradley Beal, to acquire Bradley Beal for Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, and I think 6 second-round picks.
All of the draft stuff, all the draft picks that Phoenix didn't have nailed down. 6 seconds and 2 pick swaps seems to be what the trade is.
That's not quite true. I think that the Suns are keeping their second-round pick in this draft, which is the 52nd pick.
And they need a starter out of that.
All right, so so 5 seconds then. My apologies. 5 seconds.
That guy... should be feel very fortunate, feel very blessed that he is didn't get traded yet. So this is obviously a pretty remarkable trade on a number of fronts. It's specifically remarkable for what Brad Beal went for here, which was a player in Chris Paul, who I don't think will play with the Wizards. And Landry Shamet, who may or may not play with the Wizards, but is a backup player. And a bunch of second-round picks for a guy who's been a 3-time All-Stars on a max contract.
Supermax.
Supermax, you're right.
Which is part of the problem, as you so eloquently pointed out, along with this no-trade clause. And, Wendy, like, you told people, you know, before this even heated up.
Yeah, we talked about it on Friday.
Basically, listen, don't be surprised that there's not going to be much of a return for Bradley Beal, given – the contract, and especially the no trade clause, the control that he had. And so it is a very underwhelming return, but it is a reset for the Washington Wizards. They will indirectly, very likely, get a high lottery pick out of this, because they're obviously going into a full-blown rebuild, which we all think is the right thing for this to do and is overdue for the franchise. But it's funny because the Suns, it's not like they gave up much to get him, but I do feel like they're getting a lot of criticism for this deal, or at least a lot of skepticism.
What do you think skepticism is?
Well, I would say it's because Bradley Beal arguably has the worst contract in the league from an asset standpoint. And that's another reason, on top of the no trade clause, as you guys both have pointed out, why this was never going to be a huge return. I actually think Washington did really well in this trade. Frankly, they completely get out of $200 million going forward. They can maybe turn Chris Paul into something else. And yes, they got a bunch of seconds, but that's currency you can do stuff with. And they got a couple pick swaps. Like, I mean, I don't think there was really a world where they were going to do better than that. They didn't have to take out any kind of long-term money. They didn't have to step down in deals down the road. They basically have no money on their books now going forward. So Michael Winger and Will Dawkins and Travis Schlenk, this whole new rebuilt front office, basically has a blank slate to do whatever they want, starting with whatever they do potentially do with Chris Paul. And I think the other skepticism about this deal for me, we talked for months about how Phoenix had no depth, had no defense, was basically a couple guys and then filler, right? Now they've quadrupled down on that and added a guy in Bradley Beal who is a really talented player, a guy who's had huge moments in the playoffs, really, really good player, fun player to watch. He also does all the same stuff that Devin Booker and Kevin Durant does, but just not as well. And now you're looking at a team with literally no picks to trade at all going forward. A guy in DeAndre Ayton who, you know, they probably need to try to break up into smaller pieces in the next year, or they're not going to be able to. And looking at a truly staggering tax and payroll bill down the road, on top of the fact that they don't have any of the team building tools, access to them, that teams have had in the past when they've been in this kind of salary situation. So it just feels like we're looking at a repeat of 10 years ago when Mikhail Prokhorov bought the Nets and came in, and they came to Brooklyn and they went and got Joe Johnson, and then they went and got Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and they spent insane amounts of money and kept throwing things at problems, trying to fix it. And a couple years in, the whole thing just turned into a giant quagmire. And maybe these guys will all be on the court, and maybe they'll all play great, and maybe they'll win the title. But I think if you're looking at the probability outcomes here, I think the vast majority of them are that this thing just doesn't end up looking nearly as good as people think.
Well, I think that this team would unquestionably be the clear-cut title favorite if they were playing in the Big Three, but they're playing in the NBA. You need more than four guys on your freaking roster. And they basically have handcuffed, and there's already going to be challenging, but they've really handcuffed themselves into these three guys. They have what seems to be an underwhelming market for DeAndre Ayton, that they need to be able to break Ayton into a couple of role players. But, you know, when I was in Phoenix during the second round, I was talking to somebody in that front office. And, you know, his point was, listen, we don't need to go star hunting this summer. Like he said, we've got the usage. Like we've got the two guys are going to have sky high usage rate. We don't need to add another high usage player. What we need to do is fill out the rotation with quality role players, you know, with guys who are solid defenders, who can space the floor, you know, do that sort of thing, which I agreed with. And then they make a trade that's the exact opposite. Now, if you want to kind of look at this through the Suns' perspective, you can say, okay, all that's fine and dandy, but this trade, you can argue, does take pressure, or at least workload, off of KD and Devin Booker, which, you know, the high usage playing 44, 45 minutes per game in the playoffs, like you can get that down to still superstar level, but not just ridiculously taxing workloads. And then you basically say, look, that team that was out on the floor for the last four plus games in the Western Conference semifinals that lost to the Nuggets, essentially what you've done is you've traded Landry Shamet for Bradley Beal, because Chris Paul was not on the floor for those games. He was out hurt, which unfortunately wasn't a huge shock. And so like that's the spin from a Suns perspective. And there's no doubt they added a, you know, big time talent. But I do think, like, if you don't have defense and depth, you're obviously the gap between the Suns and the Nuggets was big. It took two historically prolific, efficient Devin Booker performances for them to win any games in that series. They got smoked by 79,000 points on their home floor in game six. I don't think this closes the gap. And then they just don't have real ammunition to you know, try to close that gap.
I'm going to tell you what the Suns were thinking. And as Dollar Bill used to say in Billions, I am not uncertain. And you can disagree with their philosophy, but don't aim it at me. I'm not going to defend it. Okay.
Right.
The Suns' viewpoint was that, yes, ideally they would have added a couple of role players, but number one, there weren't a ton of role players that were really a great fit. Number one. Number two, if you look at the rules in the second apron, basically, you know, the first apron's been around for six years. And so the way it used to be is if you use the full mid level, you were dancing around whether you could hit, because once you use the full mid level, you were hard capped. And, you know, we would see these teams who use the full mid level who were like signing 10-day guys and then waiving them and like playing around trying to get through the season under the hard cap. Mm-hmm. What the second apron does is it made the taxpayer mid-level the same thing. If you use the taxpayer mid-level, now you're doing the same thing. You're dancing around because you're not allowed to exceed the second apron. And so what the Suns were afraid of is, number one, they didn't like the number of role. They didn't like their role player options anyway. They weren't sure they were going to be able to win some of the bidding wars. And secondly, dancing around with a hard cap, that's hard. Like that's really difficult. Nobody likes to do that. So they were like, look, if you're going to breach the second apron, blow past it. Because under the new rules, once you blow past the second apron, you can't sign anybody to mid-levels anyway. Okay. And if you make a trade, you can't take three players and trade it for one. You can only trade one player for one player.
Right.
So if you have a bunch of guys on minimum contracts and you're 50 cents into the second apron, you know, all you can trade is minimum contracts. So go big or go home. Now, you can say to me, that's insane, that going deep into the second apron is exactly what you don't want, that it messes with your future draft picks, that it messes with your trades, that it messes with your signings. All that's true. I'm just telling you that their viewpoint is blasting into the second apron because guys, they're not done working here. I think they're going to retry. They're going to try to re-sign the majority of their free agents. Torrey Craig. I'm talking about Josh Okogie. I'm talking about Bismack Biyombo. I'm talking about Jock Landale. And I don't think they're going to be signing them to minimums. I think they're going to be signing them to more. I think they're going to keep spending. They've even got a $5 million trade exception. I think they're going to try to use it. Now, I don't know what they're going to send out for it because they've given all their second picks. They may not be able to use it. I think they're going to try to use it because I think that they're saying we're going to go as far into the second apron as we can so that at least we have some options up there. And yeah, it's going to cost a lot of money, but let me just say this. They're not in the repeater tax, unlike the Warriors, unlike the Nets. So yeah, it's going to cost them a lot, but they're only paying the front tax. They're not going to pay the repeater because they haven't paid the tax. Because Robert Sarver, they haven't paid the tax. Now, I'm not defending that position. I'm just telling you
the one good thing Robert Sarver did for them.
And the thing about it is, like, look, at the end of the day, they traded Chris Paul, who they were thinking about waiving.
Right.
Probably, every time I said, I'm pretty sure I said on TV and radio and podcasts, don't assume they're going to waive Chris Paul. I think I said that about 8 times in the last week because they were hoping for something like this to happen. But they were going to waive Chris Paul and they were going to try to sign guys to exceptions. They got a guy they were going to waive and Landry Shamet, who was a Monty Williams favorite. I don't even know where he would have fit in for Frank Vogel. I mean, he would have played, but I don't know where he would have fit in.
Because somebody has to.
Right. And they turned that into Bradley Beal. Now, you can say that Bradley Beal's contract is ridiculous. And the other thing is, Brad, according to Woj, did not dissolve his no-trade clause. He carried it over, which I would too if I were him.
Of course.
So that's an issue. But that's without, they were like out of the paths to choose. That was the one that they liked the best. And it may not work. I'm just telling you, you know, that's their viewpoint. The other thing I'll say
is, that's why this is the Nets from 10 years ago. This is exactly what the Nets did.
The other thing I'm going to say is in the playoffs, as you know, McMahon, they played Devin Booker as their primary ball handler. And Booker was absolutely awesome.
Yep.
He averaged 34 points. I think he led the playoffs in scoring. I know it was only 2 rounds.
But points per game. Yeah.
Yeah. He averaged 7 assists, shot 59%, something like that. He was awesome. Now, I'm not saying you want him to be your primary ball handler for 70% of 82 games, but going forward, he will be their point guard, I think, in the playoffs. And so you look at Durant, Beal, and Booker, and you say you have plenty of ball handling there. You don't, because I see people saying, well, who's going to be their point guard? They don't need one.
Devin Booker. Yeah. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that.
I actually like Jordan Goodwin, the guy they got from Washington to trade too. I think he's a useful guy that they could end up being in their rotation next season. I don't think ball handling is the problem. I think they got 3 stars on their team who've combined to miss an average of 30 games a year the past 2 years that have all, including Devin Booker, by the way, all have now fairly significant history of muscle issues, which tend to recur over and over again. And they have no depth. And again, the key point is here, you could sign all these mediocre players for extra money if you want. They can't aggregate them together after next year to make trades, and they have no picks to put in any trades. So it's literally like, yeah, we got a player. Do you want to give us a player for that player? Like, they're just so hamstrung with what they've got. And maybe they'll strike rich on some minimum guys because they're in an attractive market. They do have a good team. Like, there are guys that, you know, those are all guys that are well-liked around the league. Durant, Booker, and Beal, I would think guys will want to play there. But we saw a couple years ago, and they're going to be, I think, better than the Lakers were with Russ. But this is more or less the exact same blueprint that the Lakers had with that team. And that team didn't make the playoffs. Now, I don't think the Suns are going to miss the playoffs. But if you told me that next spring we're talking about the Suns in the play-in tournament because their guys all play 55-ish, 60 games and miss a ton of time and they finish with the 8 seed. Like, I think that's possible here. Like, fairly possible with the way this is set up.
And then the other thing is the DeAndre Ayton situation, which has been weird for 2 years now. And yes, the relationship with Monty Williams was not going to be repaired, and that no longer is a concern. But as we've said many times, it's not like Monty Williams was out on an island with his frustrations with DeAndre Ayton. You know, I think that permeated throughout the locker room and much of the organization, is fair to say. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've heard a lot about Ayton from his critics inside that franchise is that, look, when he doesn't feel like he's a primary offensive option, he mopes, he pouts, and he loafs a lot on the defensive end. Well,
newsflash,
he's not the primary.
DeAndre, I was going to say, he ain't going to be an option, let alone a primary option.
He's now, you know, and we'll see how much those guys are all on the floor together. But obviously, you know, you look at this roster, he is the distant number four guy in terms of who's going to get touches. Like, DeAndre Ayton wanting post-ups, they're going to look at him and be like, are you kidding me? And then it gets to a point where, okay, you know, I'm not touching it. Why should I set a good screen? Why should I run the floor hard? Why should I, you know, work my ass off defensively to anchor this defense and do all the dirty work? I think you're going to be dealing with that kind of stuff. And so, you know, Frank Vogel was smart to pump up Ayton in his introductory press conference, especially if he's told, you know, coming in like, hey, man, we're not finding the market that we hope to find for this guy. But that's going to be, I think, a major, major challenge. And Ayton's, you know, I actually thought he handled the situation pretty well last year. I thought that watching, some of the people who were a lot closer to the situation were living with it, didn't always agree with that opinion of mine.
Well, you know, you can make the case that, you know, their two biggest rivals in the West, or two of their biggest rivals, have great bigs, Jokic and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And so
the two teams in the West Finals.
Yeah. So that's definitely a concern. So look, I'm not defending that position. I'm not saying it's definitely going to work. I'm just telling you.
Well, it's what they have to do. They don't have a choice. Like, if you're going to make this trade, you have to say we're going to spend whatever we can, because that's the only path they have going forward. I just will be very curious to see where we sit in a couple of years when they're staring at a $500 million payroll and tax bill, which is like where this thing is headed, you know, and
like the inflation adjusted nets were.
Well, and again, like, you know, Mikhail Prokhorov did that for a couple of years and then was like, might be done spending this money.
The one issue I have with that comp is Devin Booker is a superstar who is early in his prime, right? So this is not Paul Pierce. This is not Kevin Garnett. I guess you could say Deron Williams was relatively early.
I mean, Deron Williams at the same point. Yeah, I mean, he was at the same point in his career. Obviously, Devin Booker has surpassed him by that point.
Right.
Those ankles and injuries had messed him up. I'm just saying, strictly from the standpoint of, they were going hog wild spending money.
Oh, no.
And all the messaging was, we're going to keep spending money. yeah, these picks go out till 2017, 2018. That doesn't matter because we're going to be spending money for the rest of the decade. We're going to spend our way out of these problems. And within 2 years, everybody was fired, including our guy, Bobby Marks, as he'll joke about. And they were cutting payroll left and right. And they had the worst team in the league. And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, but it's just, you know, it's easy to say today, we're going to spend and spend and spend. But if the results don't follow, we'll see how long Matt Ishbia wants to just be throwing good money after bad.
And ironically, I think the Nets are probably a team that was very happy about today's trade because what you have now, and it was pretty much this way when they did the Durant trade, but it's even more, it's like, hey, all in on a very short window. And those picks that they gave up to get KD extend beyond that very short window. And so, you know, this might be the Suns go all in for, you know, whatever it is, 3 or 4 years and then blow it up and they go through a total rebuild. But the problem with that is they can't really afford to blow it up and go through a total rebuild when the Nets have the draft capital.
Well, and that's what happened with Boston, and they ended up with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And look, maybe the...
And that's what happened with the Nets when, you know, they gave up all their picks to get Harden.
Right. Exactly. And look, maybe they'll win the title this year.
They're not blowing it up. They're staying kind of... They're scrapping to stay middle of the pack because there's no benefit to blowing it up for them.
Yeah. And look, maybe they'll win. I mean, it's a ton of talent, but let's see if they're all on the court. Let's see how it goes. But it's... I know it's easy to look at the names and go, oh man, Suns just got an absolute steal here, but there's a whole lot of downside risk on this.
It says a lot about Washington, Michael Winger coming in and making his first order of business to trade the franchise player for anything he could get. Because as I said, and it's now just obvious, the main asset in trading Bradley Beal was getting out of that contract. That's the 100%. Main asset. The other thing is, I'm not sure.
And restarting.
I'm not sure that the Suns really had any other competition here. I'm not sure there was any ironclad other bids.
It certainly seemed like the Heat's efforts were half-hearted.
Well, I don't know exactly. I just don't think that I think that the Heat had a lot of things to consider. The Heat would never. I don't think the Heat could honestly feel like they should breach the second apron on this.
I wouldn't even say it's that. I would say while Damian Lillard is a possibility, and I'm not saying he's getting traded, but while that's a possibility, you can't cross off that door. Right. Whereas Phoenix doesn't have other options. Like you said, we're talking about a guy they were talking about waiving. We're talking about Landry Shamet. We're talking about second round picks. Like, they basically took all their stuff and combined it into one guy. But Miami has options. So they weren't going to close off all their other options to do this deal now. So if a deal was going to happen before the draft, it made sense that it would be somewhere else.
You think the Heat would close up options to do Dame Lillard?
I think that would be a much different conversation.
I think that'd be an awfully... awfully good fit. If you've got Dame, Jimmy, and Bam, and still some quality role players,
that would be a different conversation.
The Heat went to the finals and then weren't able to really put up a fight in the finals because they just didn't have enough offensive firepower. Damian Lillard would pack a lot of offensive firepower into that mix.
Well, and it's why the theoretical fit of Bradley Beal made a lot of sense there. Because if Bradley Beal, the all-NBA 30-point-a-game scorer, showed up in Miami, then, like, yeah, he's literally the guy that they needed in that series. But, you know, there's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts in that scenario, too, that are just not – that made it a lot more complicated. And I just don't – I never thought that if this trade happened before the draft that Miami would be involved because
a big factor with this trade wasn't just that Bradley had only played 90 games over the last 2 years. The Wizards weren't playing for a whole ton.
Right.
It's that no trade clause can travel. And according to Woj, it has. And so the Heat are a team that is always hunting and always looking for big moves. And I just think you're weighing them down. I think, I mean, having that guy on that roster when there are other options is difficult.
Well, I've talked to a lot of teams about the second apron and about the new CBA, and the general consensus is that if you're going to have three guys and they've got Jimmy and Bam, you're going to spend money on a third guy. You better be damn sure that you are all in on the third guy. Because in this new system, it's very unforgiving. You can have two guys, like say like Boston, right? Or to a lesser extent, Denver. You have three guys on the Fun Max in Denver. You can have a couple guys on maxes and then a lot of depth around them. But if you go to that three-star model in the new system, you're basically going to be down to the studs around them. And so you got to really make sure that you feel great about all three of those guys when you decide to do that. You know, calculus is just a lot different than it used to be.
When he's healthy, Bradley Beal is a very good player. He is a professional scorer. He can handle the ball. He brings a lot to the table. And I've been trying to say this for the last week. You have to separate Bradley Beal, the player, from Bradley Beal, the contract.
Right.
Well, we also are not sure
Bradley Beal is the number 36 player in the league.
Look, I asked a few people around the league, and I didn't. You guys didn't push back on that. I know people around the league didn't push back on
it. He sent me the list.
He sent us a list, and I looked at the list, and I'm like,
now look,
there were no year. I wasn't like saying you're a fool for the
It was look, in a year
tough to dispute.
In a year, he could be in the top 20 again because he's got that kind of talent. But we're coming off 2 years where he was good, but he like looked like Tyler Hero. Like that's not a guy you're paying $200 million.
Well, and then you're paying a guy, you know, 50-ish million a year to be your number three guy. That's tough math.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you really got to be, if you have the three-star model in this new economic system the league is in, you've got to really be all in on that group because that's basically what your team's going
to
be.
This roster is thin enough to where they might need Ishbia to bust out some of that Michigan State skill and, you know, come in and give him a couple points here and there.
I mean, he did.
I'll tell you what, the guy can get loose
last year, so
he'll scrap for a loose ball. That we know, we have seen that.
Yeah, he can play keep away too. I've seen it. He's got a sleight of hand.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Let's talk about Chris Paul real quick. So, by the way, Chris Paul had a pretty darn good day. I'm going to tell you why. He was looking at getting waived and making $15 million, 15.8, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yep. And as part of this deal, I believe he's getting the full thing guaranteed. And so he just
has to be most of it just to make the trade happen. But yeah.
Yeah. When they included Goodwin in the deal, it made it pretty clear he was getting the full thing guaranteed.
Yeah.
So, that was a good day. $15 million afternoon. That was pretty good,
I would say.
I don't think he's going to play for the Wizards. But how he doesn't play for the Wizards is some mystery. I would be surprised if the Wizards straight out waived him. I would try to get him to take a buyout.
I wouldn't even want him to take a buyout personally.
Why? If you have teams interested in trading for him, why not trade the
guy? Just not walk away from a $30 million expiring contract when I'm starting a rebuild. You could turn that into a lot of stuff.
Exactly. So that's the question. I'm sure Chris Paul is going to want to be let go now. He wants to be a free agent July 1st.
If I'm the Wizards, I say, hey, Chris, we just gave you an extra $50 million. Like, we're going to try to trade you. If not, you're going to be a Wizard.
Got it. Cool. Nice. That's your negotiating position. My negotiating position as Chris Paul is I'm never going to even show up in Washington.
That's fine. So you can say it all. I'm not worried about that either.
Okay. So let's just ask this. Is there anybody who would seriously want to trade him to play him? Number one.
I mean, there's two teams, both where he lives.
Well, I don't think the Lakers are trading for him.
Hey, can I interest you in the D'Angelo Russell sign and trade? Short conversation.
I can't see the Wizards doing that. I mean, the Clippers obviously have lots of salaries they could trade for Chris Paul. They've got a ton of guys making $10 to $15 to $20 million. Mm-hmm. We were talking about before the pod. You just go down the list: Norman Powell, Marcus Morris, Nick Batum, Robert Covington, Avika Zubac, Terrence Mann, all making between 18
Aaron Gordon,
and 10.
They're not trading a lot of those guys. They're not.
No, but I'm just saying. They have a lot of guys.
But to put together Gordon a trade. Can be a $21 million expiring contract. Morris, I think, is like 17-ish.
He's 17. Batum and Covington are both at 11-7.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think Batum is on. We don't want to trade him list. I think the rest of those guys, they'd be more than happy to include in a deal to kind of make the salary work. And then, look, obviously Michael Winger just came from the Clippers. Does he like Bones Highland? Does he like Jason Preston? Does he like Brandon Boston? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe some, basically veteran expiring salary filler and one or two of those young guys is enough to get it done.
I would take Terrence Mann if they're not. They didn't use him much last year. I'd be glad to have Terrence Mann.
I found the Clippers. That's not a guy I'm giving up.
That's the thing. I don't really get a Chris Paul trade for them unless it'd be a weird fit for Washington.
Here's the other thing.
And for the Clippers.
Let's say Chris Paul gets free. Mm-hmm. We know if he gets free, he wants to play in LA. That's not any insight. If you're the Clippers, and by the way, I think there's been a big assumption that Chris Paul is going to go play for the Lakers. I would not have that assumption that mm-hmm. the Clippers are not equal standing, if not higher standing in that battle. Okay. So let me ask you this. If you're the Clippers and you got Russell Westbrook sitting there, free agent, and you got Chris Paul, let's just say he gets bought out. Let's say he's free.
And are we assuming that Russ would sign for, I forget the exact number, but the relatively small number that they're going to offer?
Is the question going to be which player would you rather have? In that case, let's just say the money's the same, just to make it easier.
I'd rather have Chris Paul because I think Russ is better if one of their main guys goes down. But if one of their main guy goes down, they don't have a chance to win a championship. If you need Russ to be the high usage guy, you don't have a chance to make a deep playoff run.
Yeah, we saw
Russ
they were
played
last
well
year.
In the playoffs last year, and they got spanked pretty easily. Yeah. Where what they need is a guy to run the damn team, to get them into their stuff, get them in their sets, and then be
Russ
able to play
plays every
off
game.
The ball. Cool.
Yeah, Russ plays every game, but I think to Tim's point, if you're looking at, again, sort of like Phoenix, right? If you're the Clippers, you're trying to win a title. You're trying the high end outcome is what you're trying to do on the variance scale, right? Chris is probably going to get hurt and miss time, just like their other guys are probably going to get hurt and miss time. So obviously on the probability scale, you're probably not going to have your guys healthy and you're probably not going to win. However, if you have everybody healthy, it's hard to argue that Chris Paul is not a much better fit as a complimentary player with their stars than Russ at this point. Now, Russ has proven he could help a team get to a certain level. And if you're a team that's trying to win 45 games, Russ can come in and play heavy minutes and be durable. And if you have a team where he has the ball in his hands with some shooting around him, like I've said a few times, if the Nets went and signed Russ, he'd be a great fit there. Have all that shooting around him, let him run pick and rolls with Nick Claxton. That's a team that would be feisty and competitive, and Russ would be really good for them. But if you're trying to get past the second round of the playoffs, I would rather have Chris.
I agree, despite the fact that obviously Chris Paul's durability is a constant issue come playoff time.
I'd say Chris Paul's durability is a constant issue come playoff time, and so is Russell Westbrook's inefficiency.
Right.
I would make sure that Terrence Mann got minutes.
I think that's a great idea.
I mean, that's a different conversation. I would like to see that as well.
Okay. A lot more to come on this. The first of what I think will be quite a bit of movement. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Dame. So obviously he would be a bigger name. We may not see a bigger name change hands, but we're going to see, I think, a lot of action.
How much better of an idea on Dame do you think we'll have at the end of draft night?
Look, I think we're going to know a lot about where things are headed based off what happens with that third pick.
It feels like a game of chicken right now.
Well, it's a game. Well, one of the things going on, the Charlotte situation is odd. Mm-hmm. It's weird how I pronounce that. Odd. I didn't mean to say it. It sounded like I was crazy. Odd. Because Michael Jordan has sold the team, but is still in control of the team, from what I understand. Secondly, they are very clearly either debating heavily on Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller, or at least presenting that they're debating heavily, because they're bringing them both back in to work out in front of Jordan. Now, let me just say, with all due respect, that the Hornets are not a team known for smoke screen and strategy maneuvering. So maybe they're doing this
for talent evaluation.
You know, they have their moments, but they're not known for being shrewd offseason operators. Can I say that? Is that okay?
You can say that. You're being very polite.
Okay. So some people are like, well, maybe they're trying to elicit a higher offer by making some mystery, and some teams who think they can get the third pick. I'm talking about the Pelicans basically, but there could be other teams out there. I just don't know if that's happening. So really, it's very difficult to know, if you're Portland, who you've got there to offer. And some team's offer is going to be contingent on what Charlotte does. So
right.
I just think it's going to be hard to really know before draft day, maybe even before draft night, to be honest.
That's why I said after draft night.
Yeah.
And after draft night, if Portland goes ahead and makes their pick and is, we've got this great young core now. We've got Shaedon Sharpe. We've got, whoever they end up with at three, whether it's Miller or Scoot Henderson. We've got, Simons. We've got these young, under 21 team, boy, we'd really have a chance to do some damage. Then it becomes a game of chicken with Dame. Dame, are you going to ask out? And, it kind of feels like they're waiting. Like, Dame, we heard what you said. We're not doing it, but we're not trading you unless you ask out. That's kind of what it feels like this thing's heading towards.
It feels like either Thursday night when we pod after the draft, we're going to be talking about Portland adding a veteran player or about now what with Dame, and like, there's really not an in between. I don't see some middle path in between. Like, cause if we all know, if they don't trade that pick and they draft a player, whoever it is, whether it's Scoot or Brandon Miller or somebody else, it's going to be, well, now what? And it's going to be, well, now what, until the other shoe drops, whether that's Dame says I'm not getting traded, or the team says it, or they trade him or whatever. But there's going to need to be a answer if they come out of that with just another young guy.
And look, Washington is the team in the East that, we're 2 or 3 years into saying they're stuck in purgatory. They need to just go ahead, hit the reset button, blow this thing up, and start over again. Let's be honest. Portland's been that team in the West, and they've kind of done that the last couple of years just because they wanted to compete for a playoff spot, weren't good enough to do it, and then tanked hard for the last 25, 30 games or whatever it was of the regular season the last couple of years. Well, at a certain point, like, dude, if you're doing that 2 straight years, maybe you just need to go ahead and like commit to a rebuild.
Well, I just think of Portland actions, words situation. Like when Portland got all feisty when people accused them of tanking after the All-Star break, we are not. And then they go into blatant tank mode, and it worked. By the way, they're holding the third pick. Congratulations. Right. It worked. And then you've got this situation where they're on the record like, oh yeah, we're going all out. We're right with Dame. And like I said on the pod last week, and I got aggregated, I have been hearing about aggressive trade conversations from Portland, where they have, you know, been, you know, trying to acquire multiple veterans in the same trade. Like, you know, and not like pie in the sky, like no way this is going to work. Like they're trying. So like, you know, I'm not accusing them of not, but it's still a tough sell.
Well, look, by the way, with the third pick, they could do what Memphis did if they go that way. Like if you turn around and trade, let's say they draft Scoot. Let's say Brandon Miller goes second, Scoot goes third. Mm-hmm. You trade Dame this summer for a bunch of stuff. Like you start building that thing around Scoot, some of these young guys. Like I'm not saying they're going to turn into the Grizzlies, but like the Memphis had the grit and grind era, which is a fantastic run, just like this Dame run. And they traded Conley, they traded Gasol, and they had a short dip, and then they immediately went back up. Like, it is possible.
So they've already had the dip.
Well, that's what I mean. And, like, they've got some, and they've gotten some picks out of it. And, like, you know, like, it could, it's not like they're, obviously, Dame's been the best player the franchise ever had. I'm not saying it should be easy to send him out the door. I'm just talking about overall career. I'm not saying he's better than Bill Walton.
One more thing.
Clyde, whatever.
One more thing for the Blazers fans. I've heard about them trying to trade number 23. I think they've got the 23rd pick, the Knicks
22nd
pick.
Or 23rd pick.
Yeah. I've heard a couple of veteran players they've tried to get with that as well. So, I mean, their actions kind of, I mean,
like they a Josh Hart type.
Not in my opinion, not what I heard, but like guys who can, you can put in the rotation and play right away, which may not be able to do with the 23rd pick. So not teenagers, put it that way.
Right.
If you ask me, would I rather have Josh Hart? I'd rather have Josh Hart, but you know, I'm just saying like, I'm not calling the Blazers liars. I continue to hear.
No, we'll see what happens on Thursday.
No, I believe that their front office is doing due diligence, but that due diligence includes the possibility of, okay, hey, if we're not able to execute win now type of moves that make sense, what's the other path? And the other path is pretty damn obvious.
Yeah. It just feels like a crossroads one way or the other.
All right. It's time for trivia. Trivia is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Tim Bontemps, go ahead.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
Two Bradley Beal questions. Udonis Haslem is retired, and now Beal has been traded. There are four. So who are the four active players who've been with their teams the longest now that Beal has been traded? Dame is one of them.
Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry.
There's the other three of them. That's why there's two questions, because I thought that one would be easy. But
that one's been all over the place lately.
Yes. The other one that I thought was interesting is Beal is one of 10 players ever to have a no trade clause. Who are the other nine?
Dirk.
Dirk is one of them.
Kobe.
Kobe
is one of them. Garnett is one of them.
Okay.
Carmelo Anthony.
Carmelo is one of them. Five left. Five or six. Yeah, you five left.
Five left. Okay.
Did LeBron have one?
LeBron had one. Yep. Okay. When he came back the second time, I believe, is when he had it.
All right. Four left.
Can you give us when did they start happening? Like, what are, I mean,
they're all within the last 30 years.
Oh, 30. Jordan?
Jordan never had one. LeBron, KG, Carmelo, Dirk, Kobe.
I don't want to sit in
silence. Bradley Beal.
There's four other guys.
All right, hint time.
One of them played with LeBron twice.
Dwayne Wade?
Dwayne Wade.
Okay.
Wait, he had wow.
Okay. With who, the Heat? Yeah, it must have been the Heat.
The other three, the other three are all in the Hall of Fame, all-time great point guard, and two all-time great bigs.
Shaq?
Nope. If I say what teams there are, we'll just immediately end it. So I was trying to have a little team? Bit of suspense. Nope.
Jason
Kidd. Same time frame, though.
Oh, not Duncan must have had one.
Tim Duncan had one. Jason Kidd. Give you a hint to another one of the two guys who had one.
Tony Parker?
Well, same, closer. Same team.
You said all point guard.
Two all-time great bigs and an all-time great point guard. So you got one Duncan all-time Robinson. Great big. David Robinson's the other, and then there's an all-time great point guard who had it also.
Gary Payton?
Same era, but not him. Basically, the only other 90s point guard you haven't mentioned.
Stockton?
John Stockton is the other one.
Oh, wow. It's just the idea of Stockton getting traded is so preposterous.
Right. It's just a very – it's an interesting list of guys.
All right, speaking of great point guards, Ja Morant got suspended 25 games on Friday. I think we should just touch on it briefly. A lot has been said about it already. It was exactly the number I thought it would come in at. I was not surprised at all. I've seen various reactions on either side. I haven't heard a compelling reason for it not to be in this ballpark. I don't know if either of you have that.
Same here.
The thing about it is that any commentary on the severity of the offense itself doesn't take into account that it was the second offense of the almost the exact same nature within 2 months.
And we say the second, let's be honest, the NBA easily could have suspended him for some of these things that happened before, primarily the whole thing that went down when the Pacers were in Memphis last year. That was absolutely a suspendable situation that the league did their best to sweep under the rug for him. So what
they couldn't prove anything. So
they proved plenty. They couldn't prove that there was a gun. But when you have that kind of situation with a post-game confrontation with a laser being pointed out of the SUV that a franchise player is riding in, they could have found reason for a suspension with that. Let's not sugarcoat that. Okay. They swept that under the rug. They did go soft on the other one. It was an 8-game suspension after he'd already missed 6 games. So they docked him 6 games pay plus 2 more. Had the conversation with Ja. Ja said everything Adam Silver wanted him to hear, and then went literally 2 weekends after the playoffs were over, did something very similar again. And that was after the previous weekend. He was promoting parties in Atlanta clubs, drinking Casamigos from the bottle for the world to see. So obviously he wasn't taking anything that he said seriously or anything that was said to him seriously. And Adam Silver was embarrassed and basically said, okay, you want to make me look like a fool? You're going to sit out for a while. And it's 25 games. And this is the part I think the NBA Players Association has a big problem with. It's at least 25 games, but it's indefinite because there are these conditions and they're pretty vague conditions that have to be met. I think the Players Association really specifically has a problem for that. But essentially what I read that as is Adam Silver saying, dude, you're not just going to go hang out in Florida for a few days and think everything's cool again. Like you have to actually do some things that are directly addressing these issues that we're so concerned about.
Couldn't say it better myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we talk about a bunch on the pod. It's actions over words. So let's see where the actions go from here. I just hope that we're not talking about this anymore because Ja Morant is an incredible player to watch and Memphis is super fun. And I hope we get back to talking about that. So
yeah,
I hope that down the road, that's what we're talking about with Memphis and not this stuff.
And one thing I will say, I have heard indirectly that Ja and people close to Ja, perhaps people formerly close to Ja, have this feeling that the NBA is out to get him. The media is out to get him. And I just say, are you damn stupid? Why, do you not think the NBA desperately wants this ridiculously entertaining young American
superstar to succeed. Like, Ja Morant being awesome and fun as hell to watch is great for the league. They desperately want him on the floor for not just next season, but for 12 years to come. Like, do you think, just let's take ESPN. Do you think ESPN doesn't want Ja Morant playing for the Memphis Grizzlies? Like, you don't think ESPN as a business would want Ja Morant on the floor when the Grizzlies are on television, or would want to be able to put Ja Morant's highlights out on you know, Instagram or ESPN.com? Like, dude, anybody who has a stake in the NBA wants this guy to succeed.
Well, the thing about the Players Association statement was that it says that Ja has taken responsibility. Okay. I don't think he has. He says he's taking responsibility.
No, his prepared statements say that.
That's right. So that's, you know, that's a, I think that's what the NBA is actually looking for.
Right.
Well, it's actions over words. It's the motto of the pod.
And again, you know, Ja, we're now up to, I think, 3 prepared statements. They've all been variations of the same thing. I don't, you know, whatever. He did say after Game 6, when they were smoked in LA, he did say basically that the Grizzlies' biggest issue last season was his off-court issues were distractions. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said, and he's got to clean that up. And at the time, I was like, man, it is encouraging that he said that. He acknowledged the obvious, did show some accountability, and then he's in Atlanta partying the clubs the next weekend, and then he's flashing a gun on IG the weekend after that.
I don't have
a
problem with him partying in clubs in the offseason.
I mean, I do. And look, not that I have a problem with a young guy having a good time, but understand what – and he expressed understanding of the situation he had put himself in. You don't need to be all high-profile chugging tequila for the world to see the next weekend. Yeah. I'm sorry, you
that's
don't.
True.
Like,
that's
understand
true.
Perception is part of – especially, like, look, part of the deal when you're getting this $194 million contract and the signature shoe deal, like, your image – matters. So for him, yeah, I do have a problem with it because it's the exact wrong thing to do when you're trying to repair your image.
All right, well, we'll see. The Grizzlies have some business they got to take care of this summer. Primarily, they got to get Desmond Bane locked into a contract.
I think that's the easiest thing to have on their plate this summer.
I wouldn't take less than the max if I were him.
Well, I'll say this, he sure ain't taking anything less than what Jordan Poole and Tyler Hero are making. I mean, that is the absolute floor.
I ain't taking less than the max if I'm Desmond Bane.
I'm not going to sit here and argue against that.
I think he's clearly better than those guys.
Yeah, I agree. The fun max, as our friend Wendy says. They got to replace Dylan Brooks in the starting lineup. Say what you want. The guy's been a starter on a playoff team the last few years.
You know, they should see what the market might be for Dylan Brooks in a sign and trade. They should not close the door on doing business with him. Maybe he's gone or whatever. But
I think
Dylan Brooks has some value out there.
They just said he's not going to be on. He's just not going to be on their team. I'm not sure if they can turn him into something else. They will.
Yeah. So I wouldn't rule something like that out.
Just a lot going on there. A lot of interesting decisions.
And they have to prepare their team for not having their best player for 25 games. Well, I know that they've
that part I think is the easy part because they've got a really good player in Tyus Jones to just roll out there with, and they're going to be good.
Yeah, but they also may need to get a little bit more shooting because they may need to generate some more points.
Well, they did get more shooting last year.
I know, Luke Kennard. I know, but
they need Bane to come back strong from off-season toe surgery.
Yeah,
you know. And I don't know, is Kennard going to – maybe he's your starter right now.
I think they'll be just fine for the 25 games without Ja, assuming it's 25 games.
I think they'll at least keep their heads above water, but
– Well, remember, they don't have Brandon Clark either. Brandon Clark's going to be out for probably the majority of the season.
But Tyus Jones, Desmond Bane, Luke Kennard, Jaren Jackson, Steven Adams is still a pretty damn good five.
I agree, but they have – you know, they have – plus, they have picks.
Yeah, and the hope is that Steven Adams, the expectation, I guess they announced that Steven Adams would be back for the start of training camp. But they also announced that it was a 3 to 5 week injury at first, and that kept getting pushed back.
I mean, that's obviously another problem.
And listen, when
they were without him,
you know, when you start looking at tradable contracts, I think Steven Adams' name would come up pretty early in that conversation too.
True.
That's absolutely true. I'd have Steven Adams on my team. I'd put Steven Adams up against Jokic. It's not the worst option in the world. I'm not saying it would shut him down, but it's not the worst option in the world. Okay. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you, Mr. Bontemps, Mr. McMahon. Thank you, Jackson, our producer. We'll be talking to you later this week. We'll have some draft coverage later this week. Hopefully, if there's no more major trades, we'll have a draft preview that we're going to post on Wednesday. And then these gents will be back and we'll record late Thursday night. No idea what the league's going to look like the next time we talk, guys. The possibility
that time of year.
There's a possibility these guys will be. We have an interview scheduled on Tuesday. I don't know if it's going to happen. You know, I don't normally have guests, but we had a couple of guests during the playoffs.
Now everybody wants to come on. I mean, that's true. You're just so popular these days, fellas.
So we have a guest scheduled for Tuesday that I hope he makes it.
But he's not confident enough to tell you who it is.
Exactly. That's exactly
right. I couldn't have said it better. We had a good run with that during the finals. We'll see if it continues.
If this guest happens, it'll be stunning to me on multiple levels. So come back Wednesday and
see what happens.
All right. Talk to you later.
Adios, amigos.